RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hey, Food Nation, Healthy Nation, you are listening to Code Delicious, and I am Dr. Mike, and today I have the opportunity to share some time with a good friend of mine. He is obviously America's favorite chef, dominating Food Network, and actually, believe it or not, doing real cooking on his own. You can read all about him at lucaparis.com. Hey, chef, welcome back to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Doc? It's good to hear your voice, and it's great to be on this program today.
Hey, I love having you on. And, you know, so and we'll get to culinary CPR, as we always do, in just a bit. But, you know, I want to take the opportunity to have you, you know, share with the folks some of the things you're up to, because you're always busy and got a lot of irons in the fire and a lot of pans on the stove over there. So what have you been up to over the last bit here?
Well, it's been a wild ride. I do local, a little more regional TV and radio that I take care of in this area of the Northeast, and I have a lot of fun on it. I run the restaurant and a market, and we do that. We're actually, and this is, I'm letting your listeners hear for the first time, we're in the process of filming a follow doc of a restaurant kitchen. So we're bringing cameras into our kitchens for the first time. We're showing, I'm putting together a brand new kitchen team, and we're going to show the process of that and teaching them what we're doing and what we're creating. Creating a new menu, playing on the concept of, hey, we want to go to this really good fresh approach. Kind of talking about the recipes we've talked about on Culinary CPR, teaching young kids. I'm going to have a whole brand new team with me. Nobody over the age of 25, I think, right now. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're doing a little follow doc to see if I can put a team together during my busiest season, before I need to go away to Europe. And so I have 2 months to put a team together that's going to run my place for me while I'm gone. So it's a lot of fun. So we're doing a lot of this, a lot of TV and radio and stuff like that, but I'm also spending a lot of time traveling and doing demos and teaching people how easy it is to really cook easy food that's incredibly delicious. So I'm having a lot of fun doing it every day, man.
Well, I think that you and I share, you know, a lot on that same message. And, you know, there's such misconception out there. I don't know about you, but, you know, I write a lot of columns, and I folks can head over to Psychology Today, and they can look me up and read the columns that I cover several per month. And one of the interesting things is sort of the feedback from the general public still seems to be this misconception that, gosh, if it's healthy, it can't taste good. And do you come across that? I mean, it's just it boggles my mind.
It's every day, and when you think about what really tastes good, healthy is what tastes good. And then that's where I try to make that distinction with people. You know, talk about something like we're really in this big, especially here, we're talking about fermenting stuff all the time. We love everything from kimchi to, you know, pickles, you know, artisan pickles. It's all part of fermentation. But talk about something that's really good for you. Think about all the, if you're doing it from scratch and you're doing it with local ingredients and you're using products that are high quality, all of a sudden that's good for your gut too. I mean, isn't that right that if you're eating fermented foods, it's good for you?
Absolutely. You know, what people don't really appreciate, and what I like to stress, and you're welcome to kind of borrow my line here, is, you know, when people are eating fermented foods, you're eating living foods. Your food is alive. And what better way to, you know, enhance, to, you know, power yourself than with living food. You know, it's literally got the energy of life. And what folks don't realize, you know, when we ferment, we use, and we're essentially kind of growing bacteria. And these are called, what are people paying the top for now? Probiotics, right? And so you're getting probiotics. You're also getting the prebiotics because, you know, you're getting the pickles or, you know, whatever we're using to ferment. It can be bread as well. You're getting the fiber, you're getting the things that bacteria eat. So you're really, really getting just a super healthy treat as far as I'm concerned.
And when they say it doesn't taste good, I always go, well, go back to that. Go back to the kimchi, the pickles, really good sauerkraut. What do you think makes your sandwiches or your dishes taste great? It's these fermented items that just bring in a ton of flavor, and it's good for you too. So when people say to me, I don't want to eat healthy, I just want to have this, and I say, well, listen, we're going to create items that are going to be healthy, but you're not even going to know that because that's not where we're working. And I'm not talking about canned fermented items or canned pickled stuff. I'm talking about doing it from scratch and creating food from scratch and using local ingredients. And if we had to pick a couple of trends out there that should be or will be and are, it's basically what's old is new again. This is the way we used to live. This is the way we used to eat, and everything had flavor, and everything popped, and everything had balance. And then we got away from that, and now we're coming back to it over the last 10 or 15 years. But now it's so far, it's coming so further back that people are just expecting great flavors and not even realizing it is healthy for you already. And that's where we're at right now.
Well, I think, you know, what you're preaching out there, what you're teaching out there is so spot on and so necessary, because I think, unfortunately, you know, maybe this country's unfortunate legacy is the modern Western diet. And, you know, it's crafted to be addictive. It's crafted to have you crave certain things. I always go back to that Supersize Me with, I think it was Morgan Spurlock did that movie. And he said, when he started, he's like, you know, I'm not a fan of fast food. I don't eat it. I don't consume it. And sort of 2 weeks into his 4 week stint of eating every meal at a fast food place, you know, he found that, oh gosh, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm starting to daydream about getting through the drive-through, because he's literally, you know, like an addict getting a fix. So I think the way you're approaching this is so spot on, because we kind of, for a lot of folks, we've got to kind of break that feedback loop, that chain that they're caught in, where it's round and round and you're just kind of satisfying an addiction. And I think for a lot of folks, they don't even taste anymore. You know, things aren't made, you know, fresh. They don't have a vibrancy. You know, you go into a supermarket and even when they're trying to buy stuff, they're buying, you know, the pre-done, pre-cut vegetables, again, to save a little time, a little convenience, not realizing that they were cut 3 days ago and all that great flavor now is gone.
Yeah. I have this class I teach every once in a while. It's at our local community kitchen. And I find what's really interesting is people that aren't, I don't even think the word is savvy. I think it's just educated in the sense that, you know, food is nurturing. It's not just there to be satisfied with flavor. But you can do both at the same time. So when the first time I taught people who don't really ever cook, and I asked them, I said, where do you usually go? And, well, we go to, you know, the big McDonald's or this or that, or, well, because they have these dollar menus or this, and it's cheaper and I can feed my family. I said, all right, well, let me bring something to the table. And I do something as simple as a chicken francais with lemon butter, white wine, chicken, you know, easiest thing in the world to show someone from our point of view as chefs. And I put it together for them, and I showed them what the cost of this was and what you're doing and just how simple it is. I got to tell you that every time someone walks away from that, they'll say to me, I can do that at home. And I said, yeah, and so what was the cost of this? She goes, it was cheap. It was actually as cheap as what I did. I said, yeah, and you know what you're doing? You're feeding your family a lot healthier. And now you take this process that I show you and then build on it, add other vegetables, add this, add that. Now I could teach you 10 other items from it. And what it's amazing, because there's an adage, you give someone a fish, they could eat for a day. If you teach them how to fish, they could eat for their life. But if it's not only can I feed you, can I share my food with you and you pay for it, but if I could teach you how to do this, you're going to eat well the rest of your life. And that's the key, is how do we get everybody to eat well? So it's not only them coming to my restaurant and eat there, because not everyone can afford it. That's why I go to the community kitchens and I go and I talk to these people that just will never even get in here and taste this. But I say to them, you can do this at home for next to nothing. And you're going to feel better about it. And maybe we could break the trend one person at a time. And it's not easy, but I think you and other people out there doing what you're doing, I think we're starting to.
Well, I think that, as you point out, when we can educate, and it's immersive, you know, everybody has to eat. And when you can immerse the audience and let them taste, because I'm like you, you know, you really don't have to go to culinary school. A few simple techniques, as you point out,
right.
And then a couple, you know, what I always like to do is, you know, everybody's different. We come from different backgrounds, but just explore those flavor profiles that you like. You know, what herbs do you like? What seasonings do you like? You know, what spices do you like to add? And as you said, build those flavor profiles. And, you know, once you got the technique on how to cook that chicken breast, you know, you can make a different chicken breast dish
every night. And you know what? There, we always talk about on the show about getting organic, getting real, getting the best type of quality of product. And, you know, people are still going to look for a cheap alternative. But if we could switch them off of the fast food craze to maybe a cheaper alternative, and then maybe we move them to the next level, it's all baby steps. But you know what? We got here in the society by baby steps in the other direction. They weaned us off good food to this fast food, to this quick service, and they got us here. Now we have to kind of bring ourselves back. And if we could do it one at a time, that's a great way to do it. Another cool thing, Mike, that we're doing at my place is I'm stressing waste-based cooking. I don't know if you've seen this with restaurants doing it too. I hate wasting anything.
When I ran the kitchen, you know, that was, our margins are so slim because, you know, food right. spoils and things. So we had to be, at least I was under the gun to be super thrifty, you know. If we did have those extra cut vegetables that, you know, they were going into a soup or a stock exactly. or stuff like that. So yeah. So as you point out, that is a great way when folks do say, well, you know, I have to pay a little bit more for this organic carrot, but gosh darn it, you can use every bit of it.
Right. And what's cool here is I stressed the point with my new staff and to people around when I teach them too is, hey, guys, listen, you can use this product all the way to the end a bunch of different times, and then it still doesn't even get into the garbage if you're composting. Or what we have here is we have a lot of pig farmers that ask me to hold vegetables. So after I make my vegetable stock, I give it to them, and it's great for them. And it actually went full circle because a lot of when, especially in season, I'll get local vegetables. By the time I've used it and used the ends and things like that into my stock, it then goes into to feed for the pigs, and you know we keep certain things separate for them. I got to tell you, it's such a great feeling to know that we're going full circle from where we started, and it's all being utilized again, and then again into the animal, and then we'll get the animal, and it's wow, what a great way to live, and people are thinking this is just got invented. And we were doing this before, you know.
That's exactly what's running through my mind. I mean, really, except for probably the last 100 years, that's the way we always farmed. We were always in that circle of life and nature, and you didn't waste stuff because it was so precious, and so much of the food was produced locally, although obviously there's been imports for thousands of years and sure. vigorous trade. But yeah, you know, we sort of got, as you pointed out, kind of derailed. And one of the challenges, and I've spoken to this before, and I'd like to get your perspective, though, is the convenience factor, you know, because I get some pushback saying, well, that's great for you, Dr. Mike. And Luca, you're a professional chef. You can, you know, do the flashy knife stuff and be done in 5 minutes, you know, but I don't have 30 minutes, you know, and an evening to sit and prepare a meal when I get home from work, and I'm tired and this and that. And, you know, there's always a litany of excuses. But there are ways to do it that, you know, are very time efficient, I think. What do you say to that?
I think like anything else, and I'm the biggest culprit when it comes to this, is utilizing time efficiently. And it goes back to the whole exercise thing. If you tell someone, if someone likes to exercise and they say you should be able to do this too, and I'm only saying this now because I'm going through it on the positive side, but for years I would say, well, I don't have time. They said, no, you make time for this, and that's the most important thing. And you use your time wisely. You don't just go to a gym and walk around there and, you know, check yourself out and do that. I mean, make it efficient time. So I started that process. And that, it's funny because you say that, because I get that pushback too a lot. And I go to people, well, how hard is it to put aside an hour on a weekend to do a lot of mise en place for the week, which is basically preparing some of your products for some of your dishes during the week? breaking down vegetables or preparing this or making stocks or making soups that you could serve later in the week. So how's that hard? Well, it's not hard for me because I have a passion for it. It's not hard for someone to exercise because they have a passion for it. But if you start to do it little by little, if they pick aside their 2 hours of TV time that they were going to do on this Saturday or whatever time and say, for those 2 hours, I'm going to prepare some dishes for the next 3 days. And if you start utilizing your time wisely, you're not coming at home from work going, oh, my God, I got to spend an hour to make a dish that takes this guy 15 minutes. It's I've set myself up for success for the week, and now when my kids come home or my wife comes home or my husband comes home, I can put this dish together in a couple of minutes. And that's what go ahead.
And, I was going to say, I'm so with you on that. I even tell folks, you know, you don't even have to give up the TV time because, you know, doing stock, I always go to, hey, how about making some risotto? And they, oh, my gosh, that's so hard. And, you know, it's not. It will take you 20 minutes, from start to finish if you have your stock done. And stock is something you can make on the weekend. You know, you're watching sports or, like you said, you're watching some of your favorite television programs. You know, you just go chop some of the vegetables or get those leftovers that you've saved during the week. And you kind of throw this stuff in a pot. And, you know, you just watch the pot. And after a couple of hours, you strain it out, you know, while you're sitting there goofing off over the weekend. So it's as you said, it's efficient use of the time. But to make something like that, which, you know, I always sort of start them off on stock because I think it is important. And, you know, from a professional kitchen, you know, it's the difference when folks come into Luca's Mediterranean Cafe and they are blown away, you know, by the food and the service, and they're eating this delicious meal. And then they go home and they try to make it. You know, a lot of the times it's something that as simple as a stock, you know, they're using, forgive the pun, but a stock, you know, a carton of something, you know, off of a shelf full of preservatives, no flavor, paying a whole lot of money for it. Again, the economics coming into it when, you and I both know that, you know, that is, it's called stock for a reason. You know, it's the staple of so many great things in a restaurant, sauces, risottos, you know, soups, etc. And so, so easy to make.
Once you learn to make your own stocks and be able to keep them, you've now opened your whole world to everything, like you just said, from soups to risottos to anything. And what's great is it's not that hard. And I had to train my daughter on this and my wife, too. She always threw the edges of stuff away. And she goes, Luca, I don't create enough stuff at home to make a stock, a vegetable stock, like you do. And what was cool about that is I said, okay, let's get a Ziploc freezer bag, throw it all in there, and then when we have enough, let's make a vegetable stock. And once we started doing that, they were amazed. And my 13-year-old daughter, that's the only thing she said, Dad, don't throw that away, or don't throw that away. We're going to use it. And once you get them excited about food, that's the other thing. Get people excited about food. They will want to do the next level. They'll go online and learn. They'll watch YouTube videos. They'll listen to you and listen to me, and they'll say, I can do that. It's once we get them excited. And we could say that the food networks and all these, you know, videos and stuff have really helped. When we get people excited about food, they're going to start thinking about their food differently. And that's our job and our responsibility as culinary, quote-unquote, experts to get people to start thinking, let's think healthy, let's eat well.
Yeah, and eating well, I think, is living well. Hey, so where can, besides going to lucaparis.com, where can folks find you and some of the things that you're up to?
So you follow me on Facebook at Luca Paris or Chef Luca. And I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, at Chef Luca on Twitter and at Chef Luca 5 on Instagram. Just check me out. You know, you'll find me everywhere. I have my radio show that's local as well. You can find that all that information. You go to my Facebook page, and you can link up with everything. And I'd love to hear back from people if they're really interested in other recipes.
And if you're in Keene, New Hampshire, you definitely want to stop in and eat at Luca's Mediterranean Cafe.